You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is The Big Picture. I'm Jasmine Shamsuddin, and on the show right now, Dr. Hatini Zainuddin, consultant for Yayasan Salam. It's a non-profit organization. It's a government organization, which is Malaysia's answer to the American Peace Corps. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. Yes, she's also the advisor to Rumah Jagaan Kanak-Kanak Nur Salam, Chowkit.
Yes.
And also a member of the Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development's National Advisory Council on the Welfare and Protection of Children. Ah, you have a long list here of the things you are doing, my dear. Apparently, you've also worked on children's issues in the United States and Malaysia for 26 years.
Yes, it's a long time.
How is that possible, Tini? Because you don't look like someone who's worked in this line for 26 years. You don't have stress lines on your forehead, disappointment on your face. You've got a full head of hair. It's dark and black, very healthy looking. You're perky. How is that? What gives?
Honestly, though, well, first of all, good afternoon, Jasmine.
Oh, good afternoon.
My hair's dyed.
Okay.
So it's really full of gray.
It looks great.
Oh, thank you. But honestly, though, I have a wonderful team of staff that I work with and a whole group of partners that we work with collaboratively with the government and mostly with the NGOs and individuals who help me do the work. Trust me, it's not a one-man show, and all of us work together on projects and programs at Nur Salam.
Right. You graduated with degrees in English and English education. I understand that at one point Shakespeare and Wordsworth were a passion for you.
Oh, yeah.
How was it that you ended up teaching inner city youth in one of the poorest and dangerous slums in New York? How did that happen?
Honestly, I had to do my master's degree intern or my teacher educational training at George Washington High School, which is up in New York in the city. And I went in thinking I was going to teach them Shakespeare. Walked in and realized I couldn't control the classroom. I realized that there were kids there who had issues and problems that had nothing to do with what was happening in the classroom. It was happening outside of the classroom, and there was no relevancy to what I was teaching them, which was all about Shakespeare and love and human conditions, that had any relevance to what was going on outside of their lives, which was outside of the schools, rather, which was really about having
surviving,
enough.
Surviving, I guess, yeah?
Yeah, it was really about survival. It was like, you know, my mother has, you know, stamps that they have to collect, food stamps to collect. My father's in jail. I haven't eaten in 4 days, and I've got two brothers and sisters that, you know, I have to feed. So it was really about that. And I said, you know, there was no relevancy to what I was doing, to what was happening. And so I switched and decided that I wanted to do something more relevant, something more meaningful that had to do with curriculum planning and education and monitoring and assessing programs to see if they actually worked for these kids, if it mattered and if it was possible.
Was it something like To Sir With Love?
Oh my God, I was so not Sidney Poitier.
That song is going through my head looking at you.
I know a lot of it. Yeah, I know. It's like Michelle Pfeiffer's character and Sidney Poitier and stuff. Honestly, it was more, I'm scared.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And wanting it to work, but also being very, very stubborn because I thought I had something to give back, but I think I had something to listen to more closely, and these kids had a lot to say. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to hear what they had to say.
Okay. What were some of the challenges you face as a young idealist in this very real situation?
That the kids were taller than I was.
Okay.
I was this little Asian thing that was, you know, all 5'4". And, you know, Asian
with an big hulking guy.
And now I had 15-year-olds that towered over me, you know, who basically, you know, put their hands on their hips and basically was like, Miss Teeny, and, you know, and they're looking down at me.
Did they give you a nickname?
Yeah, it was really Miss Teeny. They had the Miss in there, so there was a certain amount of respect. But it was a joke because I was so much smaller than them. But you know, with the kids, they are at the end of the day, whether they're 6 feet or 5'7", still taller than me. It was really about respect and listening and wanting what's best for them, and then realizing that they know that you really want what's best for them, that there is no ulterior motive, that you really want to help. And when you do that, and when you learn to respect and trust the children, they will give you that and more. And for me, I'm having goosebumps just talking about them. They were They're amazing. They're amazing kids. And too many times we put on labels on children.
Yeah.
And it was a perfect opportunity to see what happens when you don't or try not to.
Well, you know, while you were doing all this in the inner city, what were your Malaysian parents here in Malaysia thinking about all this? I mean, they were probably worried. Think about you.
My mother didn't say much to me. My father gave me an earful. He used to say, why can't you go and be a nice, good lecturer somewhere at the university? Why do you have to work in all these poor areas? Why do you have to do this? You know, he was always be scared. You know, the gang's there. And I went, yep, I'm working with them. And he just completely, completely not get it. But I think over the years and stuff, when he realized what I was doing, and then especially since when I came back and started working in Chow Kit, and it was a similar kind of situation, I think he got it. And he was okay with it. But yeah, no, I think I gave them heart attacks for a long, long time.
Yeah, so now you're working in Chow Kit with the Chow Kids. Mm. Are there any, I mean, two different worlds, really, but, you know, are they all the same?
And I'll tell you this, the children are the same.
Yeah.
The difference is matter of approach, and it's a cultural and religious thing, honestly. The kids that I worked with in Bed-Stuy, Ocean Hill, Brownsville, or Jamaica, Queens, or Bronx, they were older. I worked with mostly teenagers and gangs and violence, very, very overt, in-your-face violence. It's gangs, it's beatings, it's guns, it's knives, it's stabbing. It's, you know, it's all this very, very violent, graphic type of things that you see on TV. In Chow Kit, it's very subtle. It's there. It's actually scarier because you don't know how to deal with it because it's not in your face. There is no standing operating procedure. There is, you're basically flying by the seat of your pants and you're trying to figure out how to help these children. And because they're so much younger, I'm working with the younger ones now for the last 2 years and we're working with the teenagers later. They're so much younger and they're babies and they're little ones. They can't even express themselves.
Yeah.
And they're just so vulnerable and they're so in so much danger. So for me, I think it's scarier working in Chow Kit than I did in Jamaica, Queens,
Okay. Well, you know, you have some very untypical days. It's not uncommon to find you rescuing a child at 3 a.m. in the morning. Mm. At any point, did you ever think to just, you know, give this up and do something else with your life? No. Do you have days that you want to walk away?
The only times that I want to walk away is when I have problems with the adults. Like I said, the children never, never give me problems. It's never the kid. It's always the adults.
Who are the adults?
It could be a parent to a family member, to a community, to a government representative, to an NGO partner, to, I mean, it could just be the average person on the street. So, you know, you're trying to educate and advocate for change at the same time you're trying to do what's right. And I think I always joke, and there's a cynical part of me that always says that I really think I know what's best for the children. And honestly, it's a trial and error kind of thing. And you really know at the back of your head that you can't afford to make these kind of mistakes because a child's life, it really is that dramatic. So it's a huge responsibility. But when you get to save that child, and I mean save, like protect, like bring them, like basic needs, like food, shelter. I'm not talking about education or bringing them up. I'm just saving that child. Literally from a crisis, it's a good feeling.
What are you saving them from?
From starvation, from death, from being beaten, from being abandoned or sold, just from having less options in their lives to be less than who they should be, to be able to be a child like any child, and they deserve all the options that every other child has in Malaysia and the rest of the world.
Okay. Tell us about Chow Kits and what Rumah Jagaan Kanak-Kanak Nur Salam Chow Kit is all about.
Okay. Nur Salam is basically a 24/7 crisis center for children under 18. We started out with under 18, but we have right now a three-story shop house and we have about 400 children, so the place is too small. We're actually looking to build a teenage center in collaboration with the Ministry of Welfare, KPWKM, under Datuk Sri Ng Yen Yen, and with her blessing, thank God, to build a teenage center, which starts work now. And that's really a center for the 13 to 21-year-old under the definition of UNICEF, or actually under any UN convention, and most people agree to this, a child is those under 18. But we've decided to take children above 18 to 21, the youths, because a lot of programs we've noticed here and abroad tend to cut off the child at 18, whether they're equipped
ready
with life skills.
Exactly.
And a lot of them fall through the cracks. So we've decided with KPWKM that we would take children right up to 21, the youths, track them and make sure that they have life skills to be able to function relatively easily in society. So that's what we're doing, and it's more an income-generating program. But anyway, that's what we're working on. Right now, we have 400 children, most of them under 12 at our center.
Do they stay there?
Yeah, we have kids who stay, who we've worked with closely, like I say, with the Department of Welfare. And on a case-to-case basis, we actually apply for as guardians for children who've been abandoned. Mm-hmm. We are starting a fostering program, rescuing program for children. We serve food, shelter, basic,
right,
welfare-based kind of things. But we're trying to expand and to try to bring in more health and educational services, counseling, the rest.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a lot.
For a suburban person who doesn't, you know, even venture that far to Tuckett, we don't know who these kids are. Who are these kids? How do they come to you? And, you know,
most of the kids who come to the center, it's all word of mouth. I mean, we really work on word of mouth from the child. It's all about reputation. So if a child doesn't like what you do, trust me, that word goes around so fast, you get
really?
Shut down. It's all children. It's very child-based. We try very hard. Some are referrals. They don't all come from Tuckett. That's a mistake a lot of people make. Half the kids are from Tuckett. Half the kids are from other states.
Are these Malaysian kids?
Yeah. Let's put it this way. They're Malaysian. They're children in Malaysia. A lot of them have Malaysian citizenship. A large number also don't have any documents, so there's no way to say.
They're stateless.
Yes, they're stateless. We do get some children who are refugees and stuff, because you know what? Children are children. We take every single person. As long as you're vulnerable and in need, we'll take you. So they're everyone, but for most part, 99.9% are all Muslims. Muslim children.
Now, where does the center get its funding? Is there enough money for the kids?
Of course not. I was actually going through this with my ED today. we're looking at this. I'm like, this formula's not right. You know, we're still... no, we don't have enough money. We get subsidized a small part by the Ministry of Welfare, but 98% comes from public funding, every single cent. We literally hat in hand go around and ask for money. I mean, I think people cringe and laugh every time they see me. They either run the other way or they look like they're trapped because, you know, they know I'm coming. But, you know, I'm writing 7 proposals a week, 5 proposals, you know, trying to get them out there. We're looking for different ways. It's not just funding, it's volunteers, it's in kind, you know, that kind of stuff. Coming in, you know, to just help bathe the children, feed the child. Yeah. That kind of stuff.
So is your center managed by completely by volunteers, or do you have salaried staff?
No. When we first started, everybody was a volunteer. Really.
We
all worked for basically no money. But now I have a staff about 12 people, and they're all paid, but paid very little. And we have a bunch of volunteers, about 20 of them, who do come in on a regular basis. We have a single mother's program that we have a system where we barter services. So we will give them seed money, and in return they have to do community service for us.
Okay.
But we're always short. Always short.
Fantastic stuff. What plans do you have for the center in this next couple of months, this year? a lot of plans.
I have
no
like
plans?
10 projects.
Okay.
We have the teenage center.
Yeah.
We have the teenage center that has to happen. So again, we're short of money. We have the baby center that's funded by a big sponsor. We're praying it happens. That also has to be ready by June. We are in talks about setting up better educational services for all the children who have no documents. Because as you know, under our law right now, children with no documents who cannot prove Malaysian citizenship have to pay a certain amount of money to be able to attend government schools, and they don't have free access to health and education. So these kids are on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to provide services for them. We have, because there are lots of children who are trafficked in Tuckett, so we're doing a trafficking training program. We're trying to set that up. We're working on different programs in other community centers to try to work with, in collaboration with NGOs, to try to help the children in other parts. We're trying to figure out how to better communicate. I mean, I could go on and on, but we basically have 10 programs, 10 projects that we need to get done by the end of the year.
And you are, you know, every time we try to get in touch with you, you're always running from place to place.
Yeah.
You're one busy lady. We do get that. Do you ever get any time off, Tini? What do you do when you
find
some time?
I've actually put my foot down now, and I say, you know what, I don't work weekends anymore. But honestly, I do on Saturdays. But I really do try to put back, because I have 2 little kids to, I have 2 kids of my own that I have to raise who really need my attention as well. But I try. I really do. To de-stress, I okay, and I know this friend of mine who's been trying to drag me for exercise is going to say this, but I do try to get some exercise, and I'm trying to do it on a regular basis. But I think slowly, I think once everything's in place, the systems are set up, the procedures are set up, then I can be, but I don't think it's going to happen for the next couple of years. So I'm just putting in my investments right now and just hope to reap the rewards later. But yeah,
we're very happy and glad that you took the time off this afternoon to be with us so we could get to know you a little bit more.
Thank
and of
you,
course yeah San Sala Malaysia.
Thank you very much.
Okay, all the best to you. Of course, you are listening to BFM 89.9, the business station. This is The Big Picture, and that was Dr. Tini Zainuddin, consultant Yayasan Sala Malaysia on BFM.
BFM 89.9, the business station.